Welcome to Theatre Voice, Mustapha Matura and Nicholas Kent. We meet in the preview week of the Tricycle Theatre's revival of Mustapha Matura as the Playboy of the West Indies. This is, as the title suggests, a Caribbean rewrite of J.M. Singh's 1907 black comedy, The Playboy of the Western World, one of the cornerstones of modern Irish theatre, in which Christy Mahon, the playboy of the title, becomes for a brief while an unlikely local hero by stumbling into a country, Shabeen, and bragging that he's killed his father. If we could go right back to the point at which you started to write this, Mustapha Matura, in a sense, what's immediately captivating about the title is that kind of subversive cheek. You know, even the poster at the Tricycle, you've got a kind of line through the original title, and it's been scrawled on top, you know, the West Indies. And I wonder whether, was it almost a kind of game?
There was an element of playing the game with the language and finding the Caribbean parallels and the situations with the original. And that took me into it. And I began enjoying it, and it just kind of wrote itself, as it were, once I'd found those Caribbean connections.
Were you looking to create quite an accurate transposition? I mean, I don't know, when you were going through the original, you were looking for very clear points of connection, or did you kind of take the original as a template and springboard from that, as it were, to create your own play?
No, I think I was conscious of paying homage to the original throughout, I've been criticized in some quarters for doing that, but I can live with that one. But the element of transposing a Irish classic or an Irish play into a Caribbean setting was very, very attractive to me, because of the element of masquerade. He masquerading as a father killer and becoming this character he has created, and the villager's role in his creation, his reinvention of himself, was very, very interesting to me. And it allowed me to draw on a lot of my early childhood in Trinidad, when I went to stay at beaches and live among a remote fishing village community.
Well, I should bring Nicholas Kent in here. When did you first come across it?
Well, I actually commissioned it in 1982, because Mustapha came to a Arts Council meeting for writers to get a bursary, and he outlined all his future projects, and he was going to write a play, and he was given the bursary, and one of the future projects he said he might do was Playboy of the Western World transposed to the West Indies. And I met him in Portobello about a year later, and I said, "Did you ever do that?" And he said, no, I'm too busy writing new plays." And I said, "Well, I'd love to commission you to do that." And he wrote this play, so I've had a sort of long association with it. I did it originally at the Oxford, and it transferred here to the Tricycle. And it was because of the transfer here that I really got the job here too. So we both owe each other for this play in many, many ways. The play then went on BBC television, and I directed it for television, and then we took it to America, and we went to the Chicago International Theatre Festival, and then it went on to be seen at the Lincoln Center, and it went on to see the Arena Stage, I think.
That's right.
And then we revived it here 10 years ago, and now we're reviving it again on its 20th anniversary. So it's a long association between both of us, and every time I come back to it, I admire Mustapha's work more. I just think it's a beautiful transposition of a play, and I think he's got the whole essence of the Singh and given it an extraordinary humour, and the lines are fantastic, and we're still working on it. In fact, each time we've revisited it, we've actually changed the text quite a lot, I think, and we've shortened it and cut things, and Mustapha's been really nurturing it, and I think possibly, like a good wine, it's possibly matured to its best.
Have you been kind of inclined to want to tinker with it over the years? Has it been something that you've revisited anywhere and thought you?
No, it wasn't a deliberate thing. But once we'd started working on it, it was obvious that with the passage of time, we could observe certain things that needed fine tuning and disposing of. And it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to do it. It's like a never-ending piece of work that we're always improving on it and discovering new things all the time. Classic in the true sense of the word. But what I find interesting about it in 2004 is that the original production had a political element to it, that Singh in some way used the play as a metaphor for Irish inactivity in their nationalism at the time, and this was the rumor, and a lot of people have put forward this argument. But what emerges, what comes out of this production we're doing now, to me, is that it's a love story. It's a beautiful love. It's a story of love found and love lost. And that's also a classical, universal story there. So that's what it's kind of happened for me.
It'd be quite interesting to know whether, you create your own jokes in this play. Was there an instinct that you'd have to kind of in some ways find a kind of translation for the particular jokes or the particular moments that are there in the original? I don't know how kind of faithful you felt you had to just be to the actual humour of the piece.
I think I was faithful to the spirit of the original. But obviously, my Trinidadian location was crying out for Trinidadian jokes, and they just came, and they worked, and hopefully they're still funny after 2004. But it was a wonderful opportunity to play with the language and the inspiration of the original took me into the language, and that's what has emerged, the Irish parallels, finding what are these Irish people saying, and I'm not going to transpose it literally, but I'm going to find the Caribbean equivalent, and that is what was a joy.
And Nicholas Kent, in directing this, and also generally perhaps even approaching it as an audience member, do you personally feel that you need to be very acquainted with the original? Do you need to keep that in your mind at all, or once you have some knowledge of the original text, you can kind of move on? I mean, as a director, do you need to kind of be bearing in mind that original Irish template?
Well, I did direct the original piece a long, long time ago, so I know it quite well. But I think Mustafa's piece is different. Both of them are set in colonial eras, because Mustafa's piece is set in 1950, and Singh's piece was obviously when the British were governing Ireland. But I think what happens in the Irish play is the Irish play veers more towards tragedy, and this one veers more towards comedy. And I think where I've always tried to move it, I've tried to move it a little more as a production towards tragedy, and possibly we've succeeded slightly more in this production than we have in previous productions in doing that. The problem is that Mustafa's sense of humour is so brilliant that the laughs and the audience tend to run away with it, and it's very difficult controlling it to get the tragic overtones of the final Peggy's final loss at the end of the play. And it's more difficult to do that with Mustafa's play than I think it was with Singh's play, which is rather a dura play. This play is much more accessible. And in a strange way, I think this play succeeds slightly more than the Singh does now with a modern audience.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Of course, because the Irish are very good at appropriating kind of world texts and turning them to their own advantage. And here you have a sort of another spin on that, perhaps. Was there any a sense of anxiety that, I don't know, the Irish canon was in some way preserved by its own colonial context from being appropriated?
I felt they were flattered. That's the impression I got, and I hoped they would have that I was paying homage and tribute to a wonderful Irish writer. And being Irish and not English, I think there was an element of shared history, like shared bedfellows, that I could borrow from my neighbour and he could borrow from me. That was my feeling about it.
Yeah, we also took it to Galway 10 years ago, and you couldn't get nearer Sing country than Galway, and it had a huge success there, and people loved it. It just played to huge houses, and people had a glorious time, as did the actors.
And you also have done a version of Three Sisters as well, which has been staged.
Yes.
Been staged here. So was this a particular point in your career when you were interested in seeing what else was out
there? Yes. I was feeling a bit expansive, and I hadn't done a classic before. I hadn't done a play not by me before. And the first one I did was The Playboy, and then Three Sisters was also on my list. I felt if I could do Sing and Chekhov, and I'd be well on my way. I found the Chekhov a bit more difficult simply because of the social stratas in Trinidad at the time. I felt I didn't establish that enough. So it's something I'd like to get back to another time if Nick is interested. But it was done. It had a very good production at the Arena Stage in Washington. So I was pleased to see that.
I mean, one thing I didn't raise, which I suppose was part of the kind of critical debate about Sing's play at the outset, was this idea that it was lampooning a kind of class or an entire kind of nation in some ways, and it's this kind of moral fecklessness that you see running through the original. And I don't know whether how you kind of negotiated that in your play, whether there is a very much a sort of a satirising going on of the Trinidadian ethic, or whether it's something that resolves itself in the play sufficiently to...
I think it is a satirising of simple folk who live in a remote village anywhere, in any country, and how they would react to a stranger coming and boasting about his deeds and his misdeeds. I think that's where it begins. And I don't, you know, I possibly there's an element of lampooning going on, but it's within the character and within the situation. And so I don't have a problem with it.
When did you first meet? When did you first encounter each other in the theatre? How far back do you go?
Go back to 1970. At the Travis, when Mustafa did As Time Goes By, and he came up. It was the first major black play, I think, one of the first major black plays by a British author to eventually hit London. It went to the Open Space at that time, after it had tremendously good reviews at the Travis. And we became very friendly at that period, and there was a whole group of black actors. I mean, you know, just the only person missing was Norman Beaton, but everyone else was there, from Rudolph Walker to Mona Hammond, T. Ben Wilson, the late Alfred Fagan, all of whom were in Mustafa's play. And it was just an incredibly warm and wonderful group of people, and a really interesting play too.
At that time, did you feel that there was going to be a working connection with Nick?
No, you never do. You know, it just happens somewhere along the loop that your circle narrows or something, and you bump into people, and life happens, and something happens. And so, I mean, I began as a playwright a bit like that, because I'd written some short one-act plays. Showed them to friends without any intention of it being successful or not, just recording the times. And they were shown to Roland Rees, who did a production of them at the ICA many years ago. So that is also an element of theatre that I like too, the chance, the good chance.
I was just going to ask you, at that particular moment in time, you said, in a sense, it was one of the first major black British plays, isn't it? But, I mean, we use this phrase a lot now, black British writing, and at that point, this is before you'd set up the Black Theatre Cooperative, am I right? And
yeah.
So, I mean, were you seen as a Trinidadian writer? Was there such a thing as a kind of perception of there being a black British theatre?
There was no black British writing. I mean, there was Mustapha Matura and Michael Avensetz, and that was about it, wasn't it?
And previously there'd been Barry Redcord.
Barry Redcord, I was going to say, that's the only other person.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously there'd been the work of James Baldwin had come in at his festivals, but there were not only no black playwrights, really, the three of them and no one else much, but there was also very few black actors. So it was quite difficult to cast things, you know. I mean, you could count, maybe there were 50, 60 black actors, members of Equity, because I was a member of what was called at that time the Afro-Asian Committee of Equity. And there were very, very few people who were our constituents, effectively. That's changed now. There must be 4,000 or 5,000 black actors, and very talented black actors, and there are also a hell of a lot of writers now. So it's... that's terrific. That's what the very culturally diverse London has done.
I mean, it seems to me, just one suspects, maybe this is not the case, that by the time you get to the premiere of Playboy of the West Indies, the cultural climate perhaps has changed. It's within the space of 10, 15 years. The kind of climate in which it's premiering is different. There is possibly a sense of a black British theatre movement now, and this sort of thing. I mean, did you find it very hard when you first started out to know where to go and where your work might be staged?
No, I don't think so. I think I was one of the fortunate few, in as much as that Roland Rees did the production of my first three act plays, and then I was commissioned by a producer called Michael White to write As Time Goes By, which went to the Traverse, as Nick just said. And then I got a taste and my interest because of the success of that. I thought I could become a writer, .. and so I started writing other plays. I did one for Ed Bulling, Ed Berman, The Almost Free. Mostly I had a relationship with the Royal Court through Oscar Lewinstein and Donald Howarth, who liked my work, and I did Play Mass there, and I also did Rum and Coca-Cola there, and they were both successful. So through meeting and working with interesting people, you know, I have had a fairly comfortable ride, as it were, but that's not to say there weren't moments when no one would do my plays or even would return my calls. So, you know, but it's a writer's life. You get your ups and your downs.
Can you, I mean, from somebody in my position, I read, you know, there are encyclopedias talking about the Black Theatre Co-op, but there's in danger of losing a sense of connection of how that arose. Could you explain why that was set up and what you think it achieved, if it achieved a change in British theatre?
Well, I don't think there was a master plan. I think it just developed that way. Also, at the time, there was when I was writing in the late 60s, 70s, there was a black political element that existed at the time that inspired a lot of people to write revolutionary works. One of the problems, I think, with black theatre after the sort of vibrant, exciting late 60s and in the 70s is that a lot of the black acting talent was not available at the time. There was a lot of old actors who didn't want to tour. So if you were touring a black play, you had to take a young black actor who had to play an old part. And I think that diminished the quality of the plays that were being produced at the time. But with Kwame and Roy and all the young, bright, young writers coming through at the moment, it's a very, very healthy scene. And I've seen, having auditioned Playboy, I've seen what the future holds in a small microcosm, and the young talent we've got is very good.
What do you, I don't know whether you've got some thoughts about Mustafa's contribution in terms of the Black Theatre Cooperative, and whether there have been waves, you've detected waves of generational talent coming through, and moments where things have, for reasons outlined, have diminished.
I think the Black Theatre Co-op was historically incredibly important. I think what happened is there was a point at which Black Theatre was marginalised by the Arts Council, I think, weren't very interested, and there wasn't the attempt there is now to actually make theatres do cultural diverse work throughout the country. There are special projects like the Eclipse Project saying let's have more black and Asian plays on. At that time, I think the black theatre community had to make a noise and had to say we're every bit as good as the white theatre community. Why aren't we being funded? What's happening? And I think the Black Theatre Co-op led the way in doing that. I mean, I remember seeing a play called Welcome Home, Jacko, that Mustafa wrote many years ago at Stratford East, which was a very profound experience, and in many ways pre-shadowed something like Nigel Williams' Glass Enemy, which emerged 15 years later. So I think the Black Theatre Co-op was enormously important. I don't think Mustafa would boast about this because he's modest, but it was a very big, important thing, as was, and it spawned off other companies like Temba, and everyone moved forward together because of the success of the Black Theatre Co-op, and because it had creamed off a lot of very good actors and playwrights, all of whom were working together. The one other person we left out and we should have talked about was also the late Errol John, who wrote Moon on a Rainbow Shawl, who was one of the original black British playwrights as well.
The original Black Theatre Cooperative was devised by Charlie Hanson and I in order to produce a play. That was the birth of it. But our intention was to train actors in stage management and lighting and song, as well as acting, doing all the jobs, making ourselves as self-contained as possible. That didn't last very long because we had hired staff and so. But what we had was an attitude, and it was kind of punky, early 80s. A bit of anarchy was going on, and we went with that kind of attitude. And we got very good reactions to our plays. Even Bernard Levin liked one of them. And then we did Welcome Home, Jacko. And Welcome Home, Jacko was reflecting what was going on among the black youth at the time. And they respond, and we took it to community centers, and the audience were like the characters on stage. It merged, the play merged, and their reactions to the action. And that energy, it developed an energy and style of its own. And that made it a very big success. So we pulled in a lot of that young black generation into theatre at the time, which hopefully has spawned a lot of the young black actors and writers.
Mm. Do you think something's changed in terms of the willingness of non-black audiences, let's call them, to come and see the work? I mean, it's curious, isn't it? You know, the Arts Council now absolutely positively pushing for culturally diverse work to appear on the stages, and it, invites the audience to sample things that they wouldn't necessarily have thought of doing so before. Do you think there was a more of a kind of compartmentalised sense of theatre prior to maybe, I don't know, as even late as the 90s, that black theatre was addressing the needs and reflecting black audience experiences rather than, and white audiences weren't coming to that? I don't know.
Well, there's a very quick metaphor about that. When we originally did Playboy of the West Indies, we did it in Oxford, and we could have been doing the play in French because everyone had tremendous difficulty understanding it because of the patois. When we did it here, there was less problem because we were in London and people were more used to actors, but there was still a problem amongst the white audience. When we did it 10 years ago, there was hardly a problem at all. Now I'd be amazed if anyone would say I don't understand that, because we're so used to the different cultures and different languages and different patois of different people that live in London. So I think all that's been broken down and tremendously, and all for the good.
I think a lot of attitudes towards black theatre has changed. I don't think it's black theatre anymore. I think it's theatre with a Caribbean setting or a Caribbean language or Caribbean people on stage. The present theatre goers nowadays, tricycle theatre goers or fringe theatre goers, are much more appreciative and broad-minded about the theatre now. They're less threatened by black plays as they used to be. They're now interested in theatre, and they know if they go to see a play that they're going to have an interesting experience from a theatre of this caliber. And it's going to, whatever the color or location of the play, it's going to be a good experience. And I think that has changed a lot now.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think if people don't understand, they feel it's up to them to make it intelligible rather than the playwright to in some way alter his composition in order to satisfy them. And
Or they can always come and see it again.
Thank you very much indeed.